Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is Diana, your host, your humble host. It is a pleasure to have you join me today, as it is in every one of my episodes. And I'm particularly excited today because I have such an interesting guest. I mean, all my guests are wonderful and interesting, but this is going to be particularly interesting. Now, the funny thing is that that was not the intro music that was supposed to play. Just saying. Sometimes things just have their own mind. Without further ado, though, just because I have, you know, so many wonderful things that I want to discuss with my guests, I want to introduce Mr. Ralph Sarchi. I could have called him Sergeant, but I have permission to do that. And there it is. It started by itself. Sorry, Ralph.
That's right.
Blog Talk Radio likes to do their own thing. Welcome, Ralph. Welcome to my show.
Thanks for inviting me on.
I'm super excited because I have such a wide variety of guests from all kinds of backgrounds and situations. Doing it by itself. Hold on. Well, it is a pretty song.
Well, you know what? It's supper music, and you're making me hungry now. So, right after this, I'm going to have to
believe. It is supper time for some people. I wanted to say that I was very excited to have you specifically on my guest because I was watching television, as I always do, my paranormal shows, different types of paranormal shows, and I saw a couple of advertisements that caught my attention, and you came up, and I was like, wow, this is really interesting. You are a former, or you are, you got to tell us what your status is. New York City Sergeant, Police Department Sergeant from New York City. I mean, come on, biggest city in the world. And turned demonologist, investigator, author, producer, all these beautiful titles. And I started watching your show, which you will tell us about in your own words. And I reached out to you, and you were gracious enough to respond and, you know, accept to be a guest on my show. So I want to thank you for that.
Well, like I said, thanks for the invite, and I apologize for all the time that I let go before I got back to you and all that stuff, but, you know, everything happens in its own time.
Absolutely. The universe has its own timing, and right before we came on the air, we were talking what a fortuitous, to use your word, timing it is, actually, because speaking of your show, called The Demon Files, they are going to be airing. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, from what I heard, and I know that I got this from the network, so I keep getting misinformation here and there, but this I know is pretty good. This Thursday, December 17th, starting at 8 p.m., they're going to re-air all three shows back-to-back. I don't know how long they're going to go on for, but I know that 8, 9, and 10, you'll be able to catch all three of the cases. I believe
Very
they're going to put them in the order of the Betrayed. Betrayed, there was one in Pennsylvania, and the War Trace Tennessee case is called Infestation. I can't remember what we named the second show. You remember?
Mm-hmm. No, but
the
I
mirror.
Can definitely put that up.
For the mirror.
Yeah. Oh, the mirror, right, which, yes,
yeah.
Brings up in itself. Now I'm going to take us all back because some people don't know, may not have known who you are or your history, but you were, as I said earlier a couple of times, you were a police sergeant here in New York City. So, I mean, how was that for you? I mean, the toughest city, I think, in the toughest town, which happens to be my hometown and happens to be a place where incredibly famous and wonderful people were born and raised, the Bronx.
Yeah, yeah, the Edgar Allan Poe House right on the Grand Concourse,
mm-hmm.
right in the middle of all the craziness, at least years ago.
Yeah.
I had gone back to the Bronx, actually, when Deliver Us From Evil was being filmed, and I just could not get over the change in
yes.
just the feel of the Bronx is a lot different than when I was a cop there.
Yes, absolutely.
We even had a woman, she hangs out the window, she says, hey, if any of you need to use the showers or the restroom, come on up there, you can use it. And I was like, years ago they would have been throwing toilet bowls off the roof. So now she's offering to let us use the shower. So
exactly.
It was good. It was a real good experience, to tell you the truth, to see that all the hard work that the men and women of the NYPD had done actually paid off.
Yeah, I mean, Fort Apache, the Bronx was here, you know, was filmed here. The arson fires, where I was born and raised during the arson fires. It was really, really an incredibly stressful environment to grow up in. And a lot of people got lost because of that, but some people got stronger because of it. And you got to see a lot of that stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I had a front row seat to all of the craziness for quite some time. You know,
mm-hmm.
I am retired. I've been retired for 11 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up on my 12th year. And I just, you know, the time is going fast, and it's almost to the point where, you know, things have changed so much from those days.
Yes.
I hardly recognize it anymore.
Development has increased. We have a Starbucks, by the way, here. We have a Starbucks. At least one,
really?
I can tell you about.
I
mean, that's when
I
knew.
I don't normally drink Starbucks.
But it was like, that's when you know that things are changing in our neighborhood. You know, that's like typically known for, you know, shadiness. And it's the South Bronx is now called Sobro. Did you know that?
No, actually, I didn't. It'll always be
mm-hmm.
the Bronx to me.
Exactly. And, yeah, to me too. And because a lot of real estate people are buying property and they're building it up, and they're going to have a waterfront area with lots of restaurants. So, yeah, a lot of things are happening here. But as you said, this wasn't always like this. It was beautiful, obviously, years ago. But you got to see and I got to live the ugly part as well.
I saw the things, too. It wasn't all bad. You know, I've got a pretty good balance on the negativity and the positive. Wherever there's negativity, you're going to see a positive somewhere along the line.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
for sure.
That's the way you try to look at it. Well, at least I try now. I wish I would have known this back then. Life would have been a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But we live
right,
and we learn.
When you're, yes, when you live in that moment of challenge or whatever, you know, it's hard to see what's going to happen and project in the future, unless you're psychic. And even then it sucks. However, I digress. I'm fascinated because I bought your book. I purchased your book, and I am going to read it, but I didn't have enough time since we spoke recently. But, like, how did the transition occur between being a sergeant in New York City Police Department and getting into this very incredibly interesting area that's still very mysterious to many of us, investigating, I guess, demonic cases? Or was it always called that, or how did it evolve for you?
Well, I very rarely do I investigate a case where it's solely human spirit. You know, I'll get phone calls from people and they'll tell me the things that are going on simply to not want to know if they're dealing with something negative or if they're dealing with simply a human spirit. You see, things
mm-hmm.
have changed from years ago. People didn't have knowledge of this subject. Today, you know, with the internet and the availability of information at one's fingertips, you know, people are a lot, they're well informed, let's put it that way. So I'll deal mostly with cases of demonic infestation because that's where the things are, you know, really happening, where people cannot coexist with the phenomenon that's being created in their lives, you know, that's surrounds them, basically, because that's what happens. They become surrounded by evil in their own homes, that is.
And how did you know the difference between... Sorry, go ahead, please.
No, it's all right, go ahead.
I said, how did you know the difference between somebody who's just one nasty mofo and then something, or somebody that was influenced by something else, some other entity?
Well, the nasty mofos are basically human beings who are nasty mofos that remain earthbound in death are still nasty mofos, but they can't do anything. Very, very limited with the amount of power that a human spirit has. We're very limited to what we can do while we're on this earth. We cannot manipulate anything other than physically. So it remains the same. You're not bestowed more power when you die. You remain the same. It's the demonic spirits that bring about the violence and the frightening phenomenon, because they never were human beings to begin with. They were pure spirit. They were angelic spirits. And when God created them, he created them with a lot of power. But it was supernatural power, because they were creatures of God at that point. When Lucifer rebelled against God, according to scripture, according to prophecy, according to church visionaries, about one-third of the angel population rebelled against God. The problem is we don't know how many angels there were to begin with. But one good indication is this. St. Pio, who was he was given the gift of the stigmata during his life. He was a Capuchin priest. He was also an exorcist, and he was asked a question one day, that if every demonic spirit that was active on this earth were to take a human form, they would blot out the sun. He was asked how many demons there are active on this earth, and his answer was, if they were to take human form, they'd blot out the sun. So we have these beings that rebelled against God. They didn't lose their powers. They lost their supernatural graces, and now they have preternatural powers they're against. They're looking to cause the fall of souls instead of ministering to souls to bring them to God, which is basically the what God charges angels to do, is to worship him and to bring his word to us and minister to us their messages. He speaks to us through our angels, which everybody has.
Right. So the opposite of that would be to pull away from that information.
The destruction
of love
of
and light.
Soul. Yes.
Oh, wow. When did you start getting calls or, like, people asking you to help them in this manner?
Well, it was around 1990 that I got, the end of 1990, actually, I got in touch with the Warrens, Lorraine and Ed Warren, and I immediately became one of their investigators and one of their students. So, well, first I was a student, and then I was an investigator. And then eventually, being that they were from Connecticut, I started the New York City chapter to their organization, and I handled cases in New York, New Jersey, you know, Pennsylvania. I alleviated the stress of the Warrens having to travel all the way down here to take care of areas. So I did that for them, you know, with my group, with my team. And you know, at the same time, I was a cop. That's what I did for a living. So one didn't really have anything to do with the other.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happened that I was, you know, I was a cop for a living, and I got involved in this field.
And it makes
nothing
a big difference because
about it, to tell you the truth.
You had a, but you had the skill set as an investigator for the New York City Police Department that ordinary, like I guess today, not at that time, don't have. I mean, you had instincts, gut instinct. You also had technical skills and investigative skills, and you still do, that maybe other people in their team or in their world didn't have. That's true, right?
Well, you know what? I understand what you're saying, and that is true, but you know what? That doesn't mean that I look at those things as gifts from God, especially when you're using them to help people.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that you have to be a cop in order to be, you know, in order to do this work. It does help to have that background where I, you know, I could do interviews and I've done them, but I was always a street cop. I was never a detective. You know, I wasn't solving homicides. I was out on the street doing what a street cop does. I didn't do a lot of investigatory work.
Mm-hmm.
Just the preliminary investigations that we would do on the street, but obviously it was enough.
Right.
But these are gifts from God, and you get them from God. You know, the way you investigate a case of demonic activity or demonic possession is you have to know who the devil is. I mean, you really need to know him, but you can't approach the devil to learn about him. You first have to learn about God. You have to learn about the devil through God. That's the safest.
Mm.
And that is the only way that you're going to really get to know who your enemy is to get a relationship with God. And everything else will be revealed to you. So that's what I've done. It's all it is a relationship with God and a prayer life. And I go to Mass every Sunday and Saturday, and I try not to sin. I'm not very good at that, but when I fall, I go right back and I confess my sins. That's what he asks. He says, I know you're going to fall, but once you fall, at your first opportunity, come back to me, you know, and you continue working on it.
Because we are human and we err, we make mistakes, but if our intention is not to harm and we're turning back to love and God and truth and seeking and continuing to learn from our mistakes and our sins and our errors, I think that that's what we're, and to use our gifts, the gifts that you talked about earlier that we were endowed with, and it could be gifts in different ways. You have gifts that people can heal through being a medical doctor. You have gifts that people can bring out their talents, you know, by singing and acting or being an artist.
Yeah, but you know what? In the same way, a medical doctor can perform an abortion and use it for evil. So it depends on how the person uses it. But you got to remember something.
Mm-hmm.
You have to own up to the things that you've done at the end. And I wouldn't want to be, for all the, you can, Diana, you can offer me $100 billion to become an abortion doctor. And you know what? I don't want to tell you what I do, but
You wouldn't take the money.
To do with that $1 billion. I'd tell you to do it in pennies. It's not about what I can get here on this earth. It's what I can get as a reward in heaven. That's why we're living here in the first place, is to get to heaven. And if you're not doing that, you're not living life the way it was intended, and you're missing a lot of good stuff.
You said something earlier about to get to know, I guess, the darkness, go through God first, and you did that, and you are continuing to do that, right? Every day we learn more and more.
Every day.
But you are dealing with the dark side. As you said, when somebody reaches out to you, at this point, right, from 1990 to now, you have done, how many investigations do you think, in your estimation?
Well, I've assisted at, I believe it's about 26 or 27 solemn exorcisms of people. That's not including minor exorcisms. I'm speaking about genuine possession, where a person is actually possessed by a demonic spirit. In the course of my time so far involved in the work, I've assisted at 27 Solemn, but there's been hundreds of what we call minor exorcisms, which we usually do them for oppressions and obsessions, meaning that there is a demon attached to the person and not possessing them physically, but they're attacking from the outside and attacking from the inside. And it does it does take a minor exorcism to sever that connection between the person and the demon, if we can be successful doing it. There's always a big if.
It seems like there's a process then that occurs between the person and the entity, right? Like you said, oppression before, like possession, for example. What do you think like attracts a person, a child, an adult, a teenager, to those kind of really dark, vampiric energies?
Well, you're looking at it from the different angle, from another angle. You're looking at the people that actually are attracted to the devil, because there are people out there that are. You know, they're occultists, they're Satanists. You know, they're your sorcerers and your black magicians, black magic, and all of that stuff. And the way people are attracted to God, people are attracted to the devil. It's what makes this world go around. Unfortunately, there are people that do this. Some are serious about it, and others just dabble. Usually I get the people who dabbled. The people who are serious, they've already made their bed. They're lying in it. They sold their soul. They don't want to have anything to do with me. And you know what? I don't want to have anything to do with them either.
Right, right. You can't save somebody that doesn't want to save themselves.
Well, I can't. I need the intention of the person. People don't understand that. You need the intention, and that's why, you know, in the case that I handled on the Demon Files, the trade, people don't understand that this man made a... Well, I don't want to give it away.
We don't want to give it away because it's going to...
No, I won't say anything, but all I can tell you is that I needed the intention of that family. I needed the intention of every other family that I work with. And if I don't get that, I don't help them. I can't.
Right. You have to cooperate. I mean, it has to be an effort here made. And
well, it's more of a cooperation with the spirituality that everybody has because, you know, people, C.S. Lewis said it the best. He says, we're not a body that has a soul. We're a soul that has a body. The devil has twisted us so much that we believe that we're physical beings. We're not. We're spiritual beings. When this body dies, it'll eventually decompose. And you know what? There'll be absolutely no trace of it. It'll completely turn to dust. It'll eventually blow away in the wind. I look at all of these people, they run around in the gym. They spend thousands of dollars. They're putting all kinds of supplements in. They work out. You know, every day they look in the mirror at themselves. They can't get enough of themselves. And you know what? Eventually that body that you're worshipping so much is going to eventually turn to dust, but the soul that's inside of them, they pay no mind to, and that's what lives on for all eternity, and it boggles my mind, but I understand where the attacks come from, and I know how the devil attacks us.
Right, and on the other side, we also have to cherish this body that moves us and animates us and take care of it. I mean, you see the other side as well, people that don't take care and abuse their bodies, and, you know, treat it as if it was just like a rag. Balance.
What I'm saying is this. I know it says that our bodies should be treated like a temple. I understand all of that. But, you know, what I'm talking about is I'm talking about people who have that vanity, that pride, which is something that will make them fall. Because pride was a sin that comes directly from the devil. And he is an expert at the sin of pride, and he makes people forget about that soul that they have. It's what drives them. God drives people, but they're worried more about their
immediate pleasure and gratification, like gluttony or
something,
or greed.
Maybe not realizing. You're going to have to pay and atone for everything that you have done and everything that you haven't done. If you drive by somebody who needs help and you didn't stop to help them, well, Jesus is going to be asking you about that when you kneel down for your judgment. He's going to ask you, what have you done for your neighbor? What have you done for your fellow human being? And, you know, if you don't remember, he's going to show you. And then he's going to show you the times that you should have helped and you could have and you didn't. You know, and, you know, we're all guilty of that. I've done that, too. How many times have you driven by somebody who might have need help because you were afraid to get involved with somebody, you know?
Right, right. I mean, there are people... There are people that are, you know, use that energy, like, you know, to set somebody up and hurt them. You know that. But yes, again, you use discernment and judgment to know that when some, I mean, you see an elderly woman on the floor for crying out loud, you know, help her up, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And there are a question
lot that
about,
will.
Yeah, I mean, yes, there are really
there are a
you know, good
that
people.
Walk right over.
There. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
And they still do. But if somebody, like, calls you and asks you, okay, listen, I think there's some weird stuff, like, when you get your cases, how do you know the difference? Like, how do you tell them the difference that there's something really, like, some infestation? What are, like, the signs or some of the really key things to look for if somebody
I'm not going to give away all my trade secrets because, you know, I utilize certain techniques to figure out if somebody's giving me the old, you know, baloney or if they really need help. For the most part, I could tell by, you know, people's voice. I'm listening to what they're saying. But my main concern when I first speak to somebody is not about their case. I want to know where they are spiritually. I want to know what kind of relationship they have with God, if they have one at all. I want to know if they're baptized. I want to know if everybody involved in the case is baptized. And if there is one single person that isn't baptized, I will not handle the case until that person or that family is moving towards a baptism. They have to get at least the process started. And I will warn them this, that if you start the process and I come there and I help you and I'm successful in removing that thing from your house, and you stop, you know, there's a good chance that this thing will come right back. Because there is no time frame in the spirit world.
Right.
So I'm able to tell people, listen, I want you to start the process of baptism at least. And then I can look into the case, and if the exorcism needs to be done, then I can do that safely. But if at any point that person stops that process, there is a danger that that spirit can come back. And according to Scripture, we're told this directly through Scripture, that if a demon is cast out, I'm paraphrasing here, if a demon's cast out and the person doesn't straighten themselves, their lives out, then that demon can come back with seven more powerful. That's in Scripture. I didn't make that up. So that's why I can... confidently say there is a possibility. I'm not going to say that's definitely going to happen, but there is always that possibility because we've been told. So that's,
have you ever had that happen?
Important. I've had cases where I wasn't able to remove or cast the demon out, and I've had cases where it might have left for a short period of time, but that goes back to you know, my advice that I tell people, I want you to listen to my advice, and if you don't, then I won't come back here anymore. You know, if you're not going to listen to my advice and this thing comes back, then why would I waste my time coming back again for a second time?
And energy.
I have a lot of energy, so I'm not worried about that. But it's the fact that I want people to listen to my advice because if you don't straighten out, you know, there's a good chance that it's not going to be successful. And you're going to find yourself in deeper at that point. And that's a difficulty at times, is people not building on that spiritual life and falling back into the old lifestyle, which is going to draw these things right back.
In your book, Deliver Us from Evil. Well, you have two books, right? You have two books.
No. Beware the Night is Deliver Us from Evil. It was just it's a movie tie-in for the movie.
Okay.
They changed the name.
Okay.
So all it is a name change of the book. You're not going to find Beware the Night. You might find it for like $2,000. I don't think anybody out there is going to spend $2,000 on a used paperback, but Deliver Us from Evil is the new title.
There are crazier things out there. People buy all kinds of things.
Well, yeah, there are. I wouldn't be surprised. But somebody's going to get rich off that.
So Deliver Us from Evil. How long did it take for you? I mean, how did that come about? How did you decide? Or was it your idea to write a book? Or how did that come about?
Well, Ed Warren was after me for a few years. He wanted me to write a book. And I resisted it. I was like, I don't want to write a book. I was having too much fun just going out, with the guys, investigating things and learning. And I had some pretty amazing mentors in my life at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was working. I was, family. My kids were young. So, there was a lot of things vying for my time.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to write the book until a series of events took place. I was asked to do an article for the New York Post, and it was a cop. One of the cops I worked with, her sister wrote for the Post, and Doug Montero had written the article, and he wanted to get in touch with me, so I did. I did it, and I had a literary agent call me up and say, "You got to write a book," and I blew him off. I'm like, "No, I'm not interested." And
God, do you have any writers who would be like dying for that?
I never looked at myself as a writer, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. I was busy as a cop. I had a young family. I didn't have a whole lot of time. And I said, I'm not a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me to come down to his office, and I did. And he pretty much talked me into it. The book was, I had to get a co-writer because, like I said, I'm not a writer. I write police reports.
Mm-hmm.
So, me and Lisa got together and wrote the book. Now, we have another one coming out, but we're writing it about the Wartrace, Tennessee case, which is one of the shows on the Demon Files. There was so much information about that case that we couldn't fit into 49 minutes. I have so much phenomenon that we captured that I couldn't use because we didn't have enough time. So I'm looking for ways to get that out. I'm going to let things go by. I might just throw everything on a DVD and try to get it out there that way. But we're going to write a book about that because there's just, like I said, so much information, just the history of the area.
Right.
And then
right.
I'm pretty sure that I'll get the Pennsylvania case right after that. We'll start writing a book about that one. And we'll see where it goes from there. I'm even starting to think about making the Wartrace, Tennessee case into a major motion picture, which we're moving towards that direction.
Right, because I was going to ask you how the Deliver Us from Evil became a movie, and if that became a movie, then obviously these other cases have the potential as well.
I'm friends with Scott Derrickson. That's how that happened.
And I have not seen the film, the movie, but I know that I actually asked my brother. He said, it's a good movie, and my brother told me he saw it. And so that's something I look forward to seeing. Hopefully it's on Netflix, I hope. So that was interesting. Yeah, you didn't play yourself. I haven't seen the movie, right? Like, you didn't play yourself. What was your role in the movie aside? How involved were you in choosing, who got cast? Because, I'm also very interested in filmmaking itself. The whole
process.
Absolutely
zero.
Zero, really?
Zero.
Were you pleased who was chosen?
No, I had no input into that. I knew who they were. I knew who they were offering the movie to.
Mm.
I know who turned it down.
Mm.
And after all is said and done, I'm the type of person that goes, when I watch a movie, I'll try to think of the main character, who might have played a better part. And when I don't find another character that I think could have done a better job, then I know that whoever casted that person did it the right way. That's the way I feel, according to me. After meeting Eric Bana, I was a little nervous, you know, with that old Australian accent. But I've seen him in movies where he didn't have that Australian accent. As a matter of fact, there aren't any movies where he has an Australian accent.
Right, right. A good performer.
So I watched him. I watched him, you know, film a scene and then step off and start talking Australian. And 2 seconds later, he was talking like me. You know,
that's so interesting. So how people can do that.
No, he's good. He is definitely good at what he does. I mean, everybody there did a tremendous job, as far as I'm concerned. My
now,
role was just I was doing the police consulting.
Okay.
That's what
right.
That was my role. But I was there every night, which was good
the,
and bad.
Why? Tell me.
Well, I saw it filmed. I would have rather have just gone to a theater, sit down, and watch it. You know. So it, but it was a great experience being there and watching something like that. So you know, it has good points and bad points, but the good points far outweigh the bad points.
That's a very good thing. Very good thing. The team on your on the Demon Files, is it the same team that you started working with years ago?
No, these. The only one is Mark Stabinski. He's been with me for about 15 years. Mark Stabinski is my lead investigator for the team. The rest are all new people that contacted me when the movie came out. You know, I got contacted by a lot of people, and I just took these five.
And how did you make those decisions? Because, I mean, these are people that are going to be by your side.
You know what?
Side.
I spoke to them on the phone. And there was just this feeling. I had this feeling, and I just went with the feeling. I said, well, would you like to work with me? And every one of them said, yeah. I'm like, okay, we'll do it.
Excellent.
One's from L.A. Deborah's from L.A. Kane is from Louisiana. Sean is from Westchester, and Brian, Mike, and Mark are from New Jersey.
That's
so the bulk of my team,
right,
is close by. The two females are, you know, on the other side of the planet, almost.
And do you, like, you use, I'm not going to give again anything away, and it's up to you to say how much, but you have your own techniques that you use, and obviously some of it are, you know, on the show. And do you have a preference of, like, kind of equipment that you want to use? Or, like, if you want somebody that's psychic on the team or somebody that's, you know, more sensitive to certain things?
Well, I know that a few of my team members, I know that Sean has ability. I know Deborah has ability. And I know that Brian has ability. You know, they told me about it, this ability. And I says, well, I don't want to hear nothing. Show it to me. Prove it to me. Until then, I will not rely on you, and I will not listen to what you have to say until you prove to me that you have this ability. And they proved it to me, so I'll utilize that. But I go mostly on my gut.
Right, absolutely. The gut is an amazing, amazing second brain that we have.
No, I don't look at it
now,
like that.
I got a brain
it,
in my
the
stomach.
Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost tells me what I need to know. It gives me the feelings that I need, and I act on those feelings. I'm not smart or spiritual enough to go up against these demons on my own. I need that external agent. I need that Holy Trinity. I need the Blessed Mother. I need these saints that were fighting the devil while they were alive. You know, just because they were a part of the church suffering at that point where they were fighting the devils, now they're a part of the church triumphant, and I need them more than ever to fight the devils. I don't do this alone.
I do this with
the Blessed Mother. She's the lead in the whole thing, the Blessed Mother. She leads my team. You do what she
says.
Does
each person feel it the same way you do?
Yes.
Her presence? Okay. I mean, because a lot of people have investigated and they said they feel, especially when something has been successfully cleared, that there is a certain, like, a sense of roses or a certain lightness that comes into a space. Have you found that, or is it different in each case?
Yes. Yeah, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. You might not sense the oppression. It might not be as overt as sensing that. You do at times. You might go to certain areas of the house, but it's not prevalent. You know, you're not going to walk into a house unless you have the gift of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
But even people that have the gift of discernment, they have limitations. Not everybody has the same, levels of the gifts, and there are certain elements that might be left out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Why God
right,
does
right.
that, I don't know, but He knows better than we do what we need in order to serve Him.
I think it's a way of creating a team and brotherhood and cooperation among each other. To have different people bring in different abilities, and it just that whole group, those who get together, more than two or three people get together in prayer, and God becomes more powerful. So I think that each person
well,
that brings in.
That's pretty funny that you said that. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because Jesus tells us. He tells us when two or more are gathered in My name, I am with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So when two
Absolutely.
People gather to pray.
Mm-hmm.
You've actually invited Jesus to be there with you.
Exactly.
You know,
and in prayer, it's, I think, one of the most powerful ways to reach God. Prayer and music and singing to God and praying to God. And I noticed also that's I don't want to, again, give anything away, but it's a beautiful technique that is used, not by other people as well.
Well, that singing was the rosary.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't play it consistently, but in all three of my cases, I've utilized the rosary in conjunction with my religious provocation, which is something that I've never done before. I've changed my investigations for the show specifically. I've added in that investigation and that religious provocation. When I normally do a case, if it's not for the demon files, there is no investigation. I do no religious provocation. I set up no equipment. The only thing I do is an interview, and I'll either do an exorcism or I'll leave. For the show purposes, in order for me to bring something to the audience, I have to do this investigation. So I've incorporated these techniques, this religious provocation, which I'm so against. I don't want to see these things. I don't want them to appear to me. There's only one thing I want them to do. I want them to leave, and I want them to go to where God sends them, and I don't want them to hurt anybody while they're leaving. That's the only thing I want. But like
right,
I said,
they're
going
to look for somewhere else to go.
Well, they go where God sends them. I can't command them to go to hell. God... Mm-hmm. Can command them to go to hell. I can't command them to do anything. That's why I always command them in the name of Jesus Christ. You'll hear me start my religious provocation is always in the name of Jesus Christ, in His name, and His name only. If I was to walk into a house and say, I command you to leave, I can get squashed like a bug.
Yes, I can imagine. You mentioned earlier in the beginning that, we have so much information now that we had so much more than we had years ago. We have the internet, we have television, we have videos. What do you think about all these different, we have so many different paranormal shows now with so many different angles on the whole, theme of paranormal and supernatural. Is there anything that really annoys you when you see some of these things or really bothers you? Because I know that one of the things, one of the sound bites they use a lot with you is when you say, this is not a game.
Well, I don't think
that,
I don't think the majority of these people out there are looking at looking at it as a game. I think they're really serious about trying to capture the fact that spirits do exist, and I can understand it, and I can also understand it. In that type of area where you're going into an abandoned building, all right, it's fun. People like to be scared. They think they're safe. We're relatively safe, right? There is an element of danger being in an abandoned building. Number one is you fall through a floor. You know, you can end up down an elevator shaft. All of the nasty stuff that can happen to you physically. What they're missing is that chances are they're not dealing with human spirit. They're dealing with demonic spirit, because they go into these places, what? They're abandoned jails, abandoned hospitals, abandoned
mental
asylums.
Institutions. Yeah, exactly.
These are all places that are steeped in negativity. All of that negative energy coming out of the patients there and the people that are working there, and that is a draw for the demonic. Just because the place is abandoned doesn't mean that there are no spirits there. They don't. They don't. The building being abandoned doesn't mean anything to them. Their spirit, they can't interact with it. A demonic spirit can interact with it, but a human spirit cannot interact with the physical world. There is not enough power coming from them. They had done this thing with psychokinesis, where they levitated a frog through electromagnetic energy, which is what we're made up of. What they did is they levitated a frog. Now, do you know how big that machine was in order to harness that small amount of energy to lift up something that was less than a pound?
Yeah.
So that just gives you the idea of how much energy it takes to manipulate a heavy object through electromagnetic energy. Human spirits don't have that. We don't have it when we're alive, and we certainly don't have it when we're dead, as I said before. Demons have that kind of power to manipulate heavy objects. So if you have something heavy moving around your house, Uncle Floyd doing that. That's some kind of a demonic spirit, and you better not play with it at that point. You should stop praying.
Right.
If you can, if it allows you to pray.
That would be a good phrase to use.
You.
Pray, don't play.
Pray, don't play. But, and I get it. It's fun to do this stuff. It's fun to go out, be scared. It's fun to investigate. But you know what? If it was just human spirit where they might say a word or a phrase or something, they might give you their name, things like that. They might move a light object, something very light they can move. It's the other things, the other spirits that are there, that can definitely attach themselves to you because of your aura, your sinful life, maybe. I'm sure that most of these people, most of them, aren't going down to church every Sunday because it's a sin against, it's a sin against God to do any kind of foretelling or speaking to spirit beings. Look at Saul, the Witch of Endor. He was one of the most intelligent men that God ever created, and he played with the witchcraft, and he was cursed because of it. Can't mess around with this stuff. God tells us not to. We're allowed is if we're going to help somebody else out. Then you're in within the providence of God. As long as your motives are pure, chances are you won't have any problem, but it's not 100% guarantee. You can be affected by these things.
I was going to ask you about objects. Objects obviously hold energy as well. And again, not going to talk about a specific case because I don't want to. And this is a good actually segue to remind people that it's the Destination America channel, right? So they can start looking it up as well when the episodes are there. I know I've seen them when they aired originally, and then I've seen them on demand because I think when you see it a couple of times, you catch things you didn't see the first time, so I thought that was really interesting to see at least one, more than one time.
You're talking about Destination America?
Your show. Your show that airs. Yeah, right. So, but not specifically the episode.
You saw the shows.
I did, personally, yes. I saw them a couple of times each, Because, you know, when I saw it again, I saw something I didn't see the first time or some information that I missed the first time, which I thought was interesting. So I think it's always good to see it. So, you know, I think your style, again, is very interesting and different, the way you investigate specifically for the shows. But you, you know, in general, there are things that can hold energy that somebody can be attracted to, right? An object, like an antique shop, they can go to an antique shop. And you, if somebody, if you work with somebody that has an object, you don't want to keep that, right? You yourself, Ralph, does not want to keep that object.
No, I don't keep those. You're talking about contact objects now, correct?
Yes.
Most cases have some kind of a contact object in them. For the most part. Not all of them, but I would say more than most, you know, or I would say that more than half, there's some kind of an object that was either in the house or that was introduced to the house, you know, and that's one of the things that I'll ask in an interview on, you know, did you get anything new before this, did you buy anything or do anything before this stuff started to happen? I need to bring them back to that time, you know, as close to as possible to before the phenomenon started, to figure out how it got in there or why it's happening to them. And that way, sometimes I can get rid of that object and then get rid of the thing that's in the house.
Interesting.
And we have found that contact objects are responsible for a lot of hauntings that go on.
And you have a gentleman that you work with. I know that he had his own show, John Sassis. He has a place that he keeps them in a protective environment.
He's got them in his museum.
So that kind of is helpful because you don't want them, like you said, you don't want to carry those things around.
Yourself. I always tease John. I'm like, what are you, nuts? Why would you want to have this stuff in your house? What's wrong with you? But you know, that's what Ed and Lorraine did that, and he's Ed Warren's nephew. So Ed had a museum, and that's what John did. And you know, we used to have classes. I was just talking about this today, earlier today. We used to have classes. The Warrens used to have classes in that museum. I was talking about the Annabelle doll because of one of the guys that I used to go up there. He was a brother. He was a Catholic brother. And he used to pick him up from the Bronx, actually. I used to pick him up in the Bronx, and we used to go up to Connecticut. And he was always by that Annabelle doll, and I used to grab him. And I used to pull him away from there because he was always drawn to it.
Interesting.
So, we were laughing about that because of the way Ed had set up the chairs in the museum.
And did you see the movie?
Which one? The Conjuring?
Based on Annabelle? Yeah, The Conjuring,
I saw the Annabelle movie. I don't normally watch those kinds of movies. I was dragged to that one. I didn't go of my own free will, put it that way. I don't like to sit through those movies. It doesn't do anything for me. You know, people want to be scared. They want to get, we want to be scared. And if the movie doesn't scare them, the movie stinks. But what about the message that's in the movie? You know, there are some movies that you have to look at them intellectually.
Like The Exorcist.
To understand. The Exorcist was a extremely intellectual movie. There was a whole bunch of stuff
brilliant
going on in that movie.
Yes,
it wasn't
absolutely
about
in the book
for me.
No, it's not about that at all, at all. I mean, it was an interesting, you know, funny thing people picked up on, you know, that people got sick on, whatever. But it's really extremely intelligent, the movie and
but
the
exorcisms,
book.
Exorcisms are not like that. You know, that's the majority of people look at exorcisms and they say, oh, it had to be like the exorcism or the exorcism of Emily Rose. Rose was pretty much kept to the original story because, like I said, I know Scott. We're friends.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, Scott had written the original screenplay to Beware the Night back in 2002. It might have been 2000. But he spent 4 days with me, with him and Paul Boardman. They spent 4 days with me, living in my house with me and my family, and I actually told them about the case, Annalise Michel. And it was right there in my office that Scott and Paul decided to make Emily Rose into a movie.
Wow.
So, I was there with them when they decided that. And then years later, Scott Derrickson was asked by Clint Culpepper, the head of Sony, what do you want to do now? And Scott said, I want to do Beware the Night. I want to make this a movie. And about 2 years later, after that conversation, we were starting to make it. So there was so many things that happened over the course
pieces
of
15
years.
Yeah, exactly. Coming together.
Things happen in God's time, not ours.
Absolutely.
It
really is the truth. And I remind this in people, just when I talk to people, that, you know, sometimes we got to take the really big perspective and step back a little bit and, you know, try not to, like, rush things all the time or, you know, because sometimes we just don't know what's really unfolding behind the scenes and the big scene, if you pardon the pun. We're talking about movies and film and stuff. So, yeah, and I'm, again, even just talking to you before the show, we were talking about just the fact that I'm looking forward to your new show, being aired again, because I think people are very interested in this this perspective and this side of it. You know, people are looking for help and relief, and also you said you've got the other side of it, of people just, you know, trying to pull the wool over your eye or whatever, but you're...
No,
you know,
you don't want to give too much away, but it was an investigation. I'm not going in there, and I'm not playing the games, and I'm not doing the show when I come to their house. I'm handling a case. It just so happens that I got cameras with me. I can't tell you how many times I told the cameraman, I'm going to throw you out of here if you keep making noise, or I'm going to throw you
really
out of here if you keep getting in my way.
Right, that's very different. You don't see that because mostly what people are doing is trying to get the cameras in there and just, you know, trying to hype things up. I find you really genuine. Again, this is why I really, really, really wanted you on, because even when we spoke, you know, privately on the phone, that you were really authentic. You weren't, you know, playing games. And a lot of people are really doing that and just like trying to make a show. For the show, for the sake of the show, that's very misleading to people, and people get really frustrated and turned off, and I think that they're sick of that, and they can see through that, and I think this is why the demand for your show will continue.
I don't know. I'll see if it's in God's will or not, but, you know, I told the network, this is my ministry. This is not a TV show for me. You know, I told them straight up, I said, you're not dealing with Honey Boo Boo here. I don't want to be on TV. I want to do my ministry in the best way that I can do it, where I can have my whole team and I can help people and I can educate people at the same time. That would be the most ideal situation. And it's taken me a good 20 years to get, just to get these three shows on the air, it took me about 20 years to do. I've turned down Discovery 6 months before. You know, we started to do this Demon Files, and I was on the phone with them. I said, I just turned you guys down 6 months ago. What's wrong with you? They were laughing. They're like, well, we didn't handle that. I'm like, well, you better get together because, you know, A&E I turned down about 4 or 5 times because they would never want to do this from a religious point of view, and I told them to take a walk. I only do it from a religious point of view, and I'm not interested. You don't have enough money to make me do it from a point of view that I don't want to do it from.
That's not authentic with you.
I don't let money rule me. These networks can't do anything with people that don't value money. How do they get people to do what they want them to do? They offer them money and to be on TV. Yeah. Well, I didn't want either one of those two things. So what are you going to do now?
Oh, right. What are they going to use? They're going to have to use what you have to offer them. If not, like you said, you'll find another network that will. And
well,
I'm really glad.
That's why I did it the way I did it.
I'm really grateful that you, you know, agreed to be on with me and talk honestly and, you know, about what you're doing, about your continuing to do. I think that I was very nervous. I told everybody, I've been doing this for a long time. I don't know. Yeah, I was just like, You told me. I'm going to hang up on you if I don't like what you're saying. You're making me nervous.
No. Like I said, the only way that we would have a negative conversation is if you belittled my religious beliefs. I told you, I don't even care what you say about me personally, but if my religious beliefs, if you don't respect them, well, I'm not going to show you any respect at all, because, you know, my religious beliefs are very important to me. Jesus and his mother are very, very important to me. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And I won't tolerate anyone disrespecting them. I just won't.
Mocking or,
I didn't get that from you. I really didn't.
No, you have my heartfelt thanks.
This is a nice show.
Thank you. I hope that you agree to come back whenever you feel like it, whenever there's something new you want to share regarding the show or your books or anything. I welcome you back. I find you very enjoyable and interesting. And I know you don't try to be funny, but I find that you're very humorous and in a good way. Like, even in the commercial, you said something like, I'm not looking for leprechauns. I don't know. That tickled me for some reason. I thought it was really funny. So I want to thank you again so much for coming on, and I hope that you take my invitation to come back. I look forward to staying in touch with you, and I will.
So reach out to me.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
We can set something up. I don't do many radio things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but you know, if there are shows that I can get the message out on, you know, then I'll do them. I have no problem. But you get in touch with me in the future sometime, and you know, we can have more of a conversation.
Absolutely, I'm looking forward to it. And again, I thank you. Looking forward to seeing the shows again, and for everybody to watch the shows and get your book. I know I'm going to do some delicious reading very soon on your book. And have a wonderful rest of your evening. Are you kidding me? I'm up at night. I love it.
Okay,
but that's okay. I have two kitty cats to keep me company. Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay, then I might have regrets, but I'm going to have to just let you know.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
Know how you make out, all right?
I will, absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody,
thank you
for listening today. This is Diana, and if you have any questions, please reach out to me here on Blog Talk Radio and on my website, rudenesssucks.com, because I'm all about manners. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. I'm just going to leave you with a nice song. Hopefully it'll play. And
listen,
looking forward
tell
to
everybody
the next...
I'm sorry, Diana. Tell everybody to go to the Facebook page for the Demon Files. We have a lot of behind the scenes stuff up on that on the Facebook page for the Demon Files. So a lot of video that didn't make the show. I just want to throw that out.
Yes.
There. Sorry for messing
excellent
up your.
No, you did not. I could put extra time so we can actually add anything you want to show. So and I will also include that on the link. So yes, Demon Files.
Great.
On Facebook. Absolutely.
Thanks very much.
Man, of course. You're welcome.
You have a good night. Stay safe.
Thank you. You too. Good night.
Bye-bye.
It's another tequila sunrise. Staring slowly across the sky, said goodbye. He was just a hired hand, working on the dreams he planned to try. The days go by. Every night when goes down, just another lonely boy in town. She's out running round. She wasn't just another one, and I couldn't keep from coming on. Been so long. Never ends. another shot of courage. Wonder why the right words never come. You just get numb. It's another tequila.